Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Trust over 40 years of experience providing innovative pension solutions. Zurich Corporate Pensions. Visit zurichcorporate.ie to learn more.
The police have concluded their investigation into lockdown-breaking parties in Downing Street, which resulted in fines for people including the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson and the Chancellor Rishi Sunak. While Tory politicians have spent the last few months excusing parties and now argue over the Northern Ireland Protocol and the fallout from Brexit, one writer has been looking at the connections Boris Johnson and his fellow Tory MPs and their backgrounds who dominate Westminster. And he gave birth to a book, and that is Simon Cooper. And he is a former student of the prestigious Oxford University, where he says these bonds were first formed. Good evening to you, Simon.
Good evening.
Now, I just wonder, how does Oxford University form some of its students into Tory members of Parliament and even Prime Minister? So many of them. Don't shatter the illusion for me. Tell me it's brilliant educators and driven students and an atmosphere of where genius is cultivated.
Not so much. I mean, what I argue is that it has more to do with the Oxford Union Debating Society, nearly 200 years old, sort of very traditional, famous debating society that Boris Johnson was president of, Michael Gove was president of, that, you know, other prime ministers like Harold Macmillan and Theresa May or William Gladstone were officers of. And it really inculcates this kind of rhetorical style, which Johnson is a master, much more than, let's say, attention to policy. So the kind of Oxford style carries on very often into British so-called grown-up politics.
That's fascinating. So what... expand on that. What do they learn at the Oxford Union Debating Society that propels them into politics in Westminster and senior office politically?
Well, these people, you know, mostly these public school boys who go to Oxford, and it's very much a Tory, a conservative club, the Oxford Union, certainly in Johnson's day. It's not the Oxford Union doesn't run anything. It's not like a student union with any jurisdiction over housing or discrimination or any issues like that. It just hosts debates. So what they learn is how to speak, and not always kind of rapier analysis. You know, someone like Michael Gove was good at that. But really what Johnson was purveying there as a 20-year-old is what he still does, a kind of comedic performer. You know, you win debates by being funny. American students who would reel off statistics would be confronted with shouts of facts and boring. So the thing was to be entertaining and witty. And then the Oxford Union also organizes elections every term, so three times a year, which is a lot. So all these people get very good practice in kind of putting together what they call slates, you know, teams of allies, where they then backstab each other. So it's very much a training in how to speak and how to get elected, more or less divorced from policy that they've been through.
So it's more important to be an entertainer than a factual debater, is that right?
Very much so. I mean, there are different styles. So, you know, former Oxford Union presidents like William Hague or Michael Gove, they excelled in this slightly older style of pulling apart the other person's arguments. But there's always this sort of Johnsonian style that he and many others had, where you ignore the other person's arguments and you just go ad hominem, and you drop your voice at the right moments to suggest, kind of depth, and you make, you know, light jokes. And so you see that Keir Starmer, who was an exact Oxford contemporary of Johnson's, he was as a graduate student doing law, now the Labour leader. You know, he was in the Oxford Labour Club and they didn't really do debates. They didn't do the Oxford Union. It was much more kind of, you know, this club supports the PLO or this club supports Brown Rice Week and that kind of thing, putting forward motions. So they just don't have that rhetorical style.
You talk about how cosseted these public schoolboys, as you put it, are. They enter usually from wealth. They enter the institutions quite early, be it school and then into Oxford. And the buildings themselves are beautiful and they're old. So they are to the manor born in many ways. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, from the age of eight, these people expected to go on to Westminster. And public school and Oxford are just staging posts on the way. And the question they really had is, what are we going to do when they get there? And one of their problems on the right is that Margaret Thatcher, their heroine, had sort of finished her project. You know, she'd moved Britain so far to the right in terms of cutting taxes and privatizing that there wasn't really an economic project left for them. And they yearn for the kind of grandeur that they saw in the British past with empire and world wars. And they thought, but now we're just this kind of appendage of the European Union, not much glamour there. And gradually they alight on Brexit as the great project of their generation. That's going to be the thing. And that's going to restore, you know, the powers of Westminster, which really is the house of their caste, the kind of boarding school in Oxford caste.
It's fascinating what you say, because I know you have said that you decided to write this book on the night of Brexit, when you saw Boris Johnson and Michael Gove and David Cameron and Dominic Cummings and so on your screen. You said, hang on a minute here, there's some connection here. But can I also ask you about something else that I found fascinating in relation to your book? You talk about them entering from wealth from an early age, just as you described there, and their place in society, and they really believe that they're going to be leaders in the country politically. But you've also talked about the experience of Britain, and that Britain didn't have the experiences, the bad experiences that other countries have had of being invaded or occupied, no civil war and so on, for 300 years or so. And over time, this results in a lack of seriousness. And that's that's personified in Boris Johnson, really. Is that what you're getting at there?
Yeah, I mean, if you come from the kind of Johnson caste and you grow up in an ancient home somewhere in the countryside and you go to a medieval public school and then medieval Oxford and then the medieval House of Commons, your kind of whole life is lived in this glorious English past. And you see, you know, this country has not really had tragedies on its own soil in the last 350 years. So what could possibly go wrong? You know, if you're Ireland, Ireland has a natural predator next door, the UK. Poland has a natural predator, Russia. And so these countries, you know, there is a kind of stimulus towards taking the world seriously. And in, you know, the kind of predecessors of the Johnson caste, you know, I talk in the book about three prime ministers who were public school Oxford and then went off to World War I as young men. Harold Macmillan, Anthony Eden, and Clement Attlee. I mean, those people learned seriousness. And those people also had very close relationships with the working classes under their command in World War I. But if you're Johnson, Rees-Mogg, and Cameron, you don't have any of that. You know, nothing bad has ever happened. And you've never really met the rest of the population in all your life. So politics becomes a bit of a game. You know, we know that Johnson supported Brexit in large part so he could become prime minister. He felt that his Eton and Oxford contemporary Cameron had kind of usurped the role. Cameron was his junior, hadn't won the glittering prizes at school in Oxford. So politics becomes a bit of a game because, you know that Brexit might not work out, but, you know, what's the worst that can happen to Britain? What's the worst that can happen to your caste? It's a country without tragedy in modern times.
It won't affect you one way or another, really.
I'm sorry?
It won't affect you one way or another.
No, but
if you're of that caste, as you say. I tell you, it is.
Yeah, I mean, there might be food banks lower down in the population, but that's not really their deepest concern.
It's a fascinating take on the connections between all of the people, especially in the Tory benches, and where they have come from. And I'll tell you another thing before I let you go. You say they have no concept of home as we know it, that home is an institution.
Yeah, I mean, imagine, you know, I know many people in Ireland for various reasons left their home and grew up in institutions in a much older Ireland. You know, in Britain, in that caste, it's normal that certainly for boys, age 7 or 8, you leave home and you then grow up for the next really 15 years until you finish university in an environment where nobody loves you despite your flaws. Nobody loves you for your own sake, like parents typically love their children. You're surrounded by people who judge you on your looks and your success. And so success becomes very important. It's very important to become president of the Oxford Union because that is what others judge you on. You know, like most people, I grew up in a home where I'd come home from school in the evening and my parents didn't judge me on whether I was successful or not.
It is absolutely fascinating. The author of Chums, How a Tiny Cast of Oxford Tories Took Over the UK, Simon Cooper. Thank you very much indeed.